this episode, we hear from Dame Tani Gray-Thompson, who talks about her experience of the Paralympic Games, disability rights, and how we still need to have more awareness and support around sport and in life for people with disabilities.
A massive thank you to Provide, who are sponsoring Series 5 of the Multischools Lowdown. They are a community interest company offering services across Essex, providing outstanding care. And if you want to find out more about them, please visit their website at www.provide.org.uk. Okay, so Tani, could you just start by telling us what inspired you to get involved in sport, first of all?
I grew up in quite a sporty family. So my mum watched a lot of sport. My dad played a lot of sport. My parents thought being fit and active and healthy was really important because I needed to be strong enough to push my wheelchair around. And I'm just naturally quite competitive. You know, I like competing. So there was a whole combination of things that just all came together. And then I remember watching the London Marathon on TV when I was about 12 and thinking, I want to do that. That's really cool. And saying to my mum, I'm going to do it. And she was like, yeah. And then I think, you know, six years later, I was on the start line. So for me, wheelchair racing just pulled me in, and that was it really for me.
I've seen lots of you as well and your sporting achievements, and you've done some brilliant stuff. And I know the young people listening to this are going to be really inspired by some of your stories as well. The reason I got in contact with you is I watched you talking on the BBC. It was a couple of months back now, and obviously it's been a difficult year with COVID. Part of the reason you were talking on the BBC is you were talking about the gap widening, especially for people with disabilities. Could you just talk a little bit about that, Tani, what you mean by the gap widening?
Yeah, so it's generally harder for disabled people to be active and to get involved in sport and to play sport for loads of different reasons. That there was quite a big percentage gap between the ability of disabled people and non-disabled people to play sport and be active. And that was starting to close pre-COVID, and then COVID just, it sort of widened up again. And again, that was because some disabled people are shielding, but not all were. Facilities being cut, closed down, you know, because they needed to be. You know, I know for me that it was great to see lots of people walking and running and cycling, but it's not actually that easy to do that if you're, say, like a wheelchair user. You know, like a fairly ordinary bike for a wheelchair user costs £5,000. Wow. Where you go to any sort of bike shop and you can get a bike, you know, for £100. So the equipment's a barrier, and, you know, it's not so easy to kind of walk around and to just push around the streets and get the same level of activity. And the other thing is, pushing a day chair doesn't burn any calories. It's difficult to get the same level of exercise. So COVID's had a big impact on disabled people.
Yeah. And a lot of our work is done with schools and raising awareness around disabilities. What more do you think could be happening in education to kind of support the gap as such?
I mean, I think a lot of schools try really hard, but if I could wave a magic wand, I'd put trained teachers in primary schools, because it's quite hard if you're seen to be the sporty teacher or if you've got a class of youngsters trying to deliver PE as well as numeracy, literacy and everything else. Mm. And I think, there's been lots of education over the years, but I think finding competition opportunities. And also, I think 2012 was amazing, but not every disabled child wants to be a Paralympian or can be a Paralympian. And so, you know, I've got a lot of disabled friends who are fairly constantly asked, oh, you're Paralympian, you're going to be a Paralympian? And I'm like, no. So I think it's, widen out to just being a bit more ambitious about what disabled people can do outside sport, but making sure they've got good opportunities. And it is harder because you have to travel further to do competitions, to compete against other people with a similar impairment. So, you know, it is quite tricky.
Yeah, I mean, we've got a little bit of experience from that. We the Sainsbury School Games, which I'm sure you're probably aware of, we were invited along to that a fair number of years ago now. And one of our young ambassadors spoke about how for special schools and people with disabilities, there wasn't anything like this for them. And she said, why isn't there? And we've actually now started a special school games in Essex. But you're quite right. The schools still have to travel a long way to get there. And there's not the same opportunities. What I wanted to come on to now was about your own personal experiences, both positive and negative. So you mentioned equipment potentially being a barrier for some disabled people to get involved in whether that be sport. Yourself, Tani, what positive and negative experiences have you had in terms of barriers or in terms of involvement? What's been good and what's not worked?
So you know, I was a member of two athletics clubs that were really inclusive and were brilliant. And, you know, some disabled people just want to participate with other disabled people. Some want to be mainstream. So there's not a right or wrong answer to that. Mm. And then, you know, I've tried to join other athletics clubs where they just didn't want to take my membership. We've had races where they've, you know, been really happy to put on a wheelchair race, and other races where the race organizer refused to take an entry form off us. So, you know, it's real mixed bag, to be honest. What it comes down to is individuals in the end, people who want to bring about change. And I do think, you know, it's not easy to, you know, if you've maybe got one wheelchair user in a school to do racing, you know, or, but I think there can be far more inclusive events. So, you know, county championships, I think now should be starting to be inclusive and not worry about what class, category an athlete is classified into, but just, you know, finding some way of doing it. And I mean, it's interesting, in the States, there's an American athlete called Tatiana McFadden. And, you know, she went to a wheelchair, she went to a mainstream school, but had no opportunity to compete in athletics. Mm. So basically sued her state and got the chance to race. So, you know, she wasn't competing against the runners because, you know, over certain distances, Tatiana was a lot quicker. You know, when she got up to top speed, and 100 meters, she was slower because it takes longer to get to top speed. Mm. But she just had a lane on the track and was able to compete. So I think there's some really quite inventive things that could be done to promote inclusion. And what else we, you know, come back to the thing about Paralympics, we need to allow disabled children to be a bit rubbish at sport, you know, and not be obsessed, a bit rich coming from me maybe, but not be obsessed with Paralympics and elite pathway.
Yeah,
because there's it's a long way from when you start to finding the love of it and then developing your training and then getting to a point where you're in contention. So I think we sometimes try and, you know, make that bit from when you start to Paralympics quite short, where it's not for mainstream athletes, non-disabled kids, so it shouldn't be for disabled children.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I'm really glad you've mentioned that, Tani, because there's lots of children I've worked with who they may not want to go down the competitive route as such, but they just love sport. And as obviously you'll be very aware, it's not just the physical impact of sport, it's the mental kind of impact as well. But I did want to ask you about the Paralympics while you're here. I mean, you've obviously been very, very successful. Tell us a little bit about what it was like kind of competing for your country at the Paralympics.
It's amazing, some of this. So, you know, being on the track and winning a race and a medal ceremony, and that is incredible. But if you win a medal, as you go back to the village, you're lucky if your teammates go, all right, you know, there's not a red carpet waiting for you, and you know, it doesn't get you a quicker seat on the bus or anything like that. So there are bits which are incredible. There's huge camaraderie in the people that you share an apartment or a house with, and you know, the dining hall, which sits 4,000 people. You know, GB is normally quite a big team, so we kind of get our spot in the village, in the dining hall, you know, and that's where you go to eat and you can mix with other people. The rooms aren't very glamorous. And I have to say, there is nothing quite the same as coming back from a major games where there's 200 people on a plane with identical kit bags.
Wow.
lot of time claiming your kit bags.
Yeah, so
it goes from like some stuff which is really exciting to stuff that's like really not very exciting at all. But it's very special having the chance to, you know, compete for your country. Not in terms of everyone who tries to do it, it's not many people who actually get the chance to do it.
Yeah, those identical kit bags. That's the first thing I thought about when you said that, Tani, was I used to teach PE, and when you've got 30 children or however many, and they've all, one's lost a sock or this and that, and it's like you said, everyone's got similar stuff. That must have been a nightmare, getting the right bags for the right people.
I was going to say that the most useful thing I learned, and I taught other young athletes, is because you all have matching kit as well, Sharpie pen or a felt tip pen. Don't bother sewing labels into anything because that takes hours.
Yeah.
Your initials on your tag at the back of your neck.
Good advice. There you go.
Yeah. And then when you're all doing your washing and it all gets chucked in together, it's really quick to identify whose kit is whose.
Yeah, good. Yeah. So kids, if you're listening to that, then take that on board. And really good advice. I want to go down a different angle now, if that's okay. Politics. So I know you obviously involved with politics now. What made you want to get involved in that? And then also, by being involved, what do you hope to achieve?
I think I kind of recognised as a youngster, I was really lucky that I had parents who were willing and able to fight for me to stop me being discriminated against. And I had in that way, you know, my parents fought to get me into mainstream school, and that's where I started doing sport. And I guess a lot of it was I was interested in how you can affect and bring about change. And I actually did politics as my degree, but very grandly said to my head of department, I'm never going into politics because that's for losers. And then, yeah, it's like, okay, just be careful what you say. But I think it was about bringing about change. It was about trying to make it better for others and not to be having the same fight now that we were having 30 years ago. Unfortunately, with some things, you know, we are still fighting for the same stuff, like access to trains or buses, and some things got a bit better. So, yeah, it's just about trying to do something better than it was. And I sort of joke about all the campaigning work I do on trains. I just want the same miserable experience of commuting as everyone else. And I don't yet have it.
Yeah.
You know, my experience is worse. So that's all I want. And so it kind of explains in a really clear way what we're trying to do.
And how, I mean, you said about bringing about change. How do you think we can bring about change?
There's a mixture between legislation that undoubtedly helps, but it's about people. And, you know, it's about getting people to think differently and just be more inclusive and just be more open about change and not being stuck in your ways. So, you know, it's not just one thing that has to be done. It's a combination of things that will bring about a difference. And I still think, you know, I talked about sport and how challenging it can be for disabled people. There's lots of areas, you know, the work environment is difficult. You know, the employment gap for disabled people is twice the national average. So there's lots of challenges out there that disabled people don't yet have equality and equity. And some depends where you live and who you are. It's not, you know, everyone's having a bad time, but not everyone is having as good a time as I think they could.
Just on the work front, it's not a question I've written down, actually, but I read an article today about how, you know, for some disabled people, the way that we've had to adapt over the last year with different ways of working has actually benefited some people. What are your thoughts, Tanny, on that? And have you heard similar kind of things?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, disabled people have been asking for flexible working for years, and it's been quite difficult. And then it's quite interesting with the pandemic, a bunch of non-disabled people ask for it and it happens. But, you know, it has been good in a lot of ways. I mean, I think there's a lot of mental health issues with online working, that, you know, working from home, living at work, you know, people not having space in their homes, like you're on top of your family all the time. There are lots of challenges with that, but certainly not having to commute and travel, I think, is a massive benefit as well. So it's been interesting, you know, one of my friends who lives outside London, she used to spend nearly 4 hours a day commuting, and she did it because that's what she did. And then lockdown sort of proved she doesn't need to do that, and she doesn't need to travel in the same way that she used to. So I think there's some benefits out of it that we could do with keeping. But I think it's also that the negative mental health side of just isolation, we just need to be, you know, really careful of, because I think for a lot of people it's been hard. I mean, there's been lots of funny moments in lockdown where, you know, people have not been on mute and been screaming at their family and all sorts of things. And, you know, I was in a meeting where someone swore and didn't realise. And, you know, that's kind of funny, you know, and they apologise and it's like, it's all right. But, you know, it's, I think the other thing is with not commuting, everyone's just filled their diaries. So I can be online from 9 a.m. till 10 p.m. And I work long hours in politics anyway, but it's different when all those hours are online.
Yeah. It's a different, like you say, it's a completely different way, and it's a completely different kind of way of draining your energy, isn't it? So
yeah,
100%. Absolutely. I'm hoping there's going to be young people that are listening to this that are kind of really into sport themselves. And I just want to ask you, especially for some people who, so maybe disabled and maybe they don't have the confidence to get involved in sport. They might want to, but they don't feel confident enough. What would be your advice to those young people?
Yeah, I mean, there's lots of, you know, places online that you can find information where to go. I mean, I think if you can find, you know, this is true for women and young girls doing sport, you know, find someone to do it with you, you know, so you're not going to the club on your own, and just look around, and you might need a bit of persistence. And I think the other thing is that you might not be brilliant straight away. I mean, I was 5 years competing before I won a race, you know, so it's okay to be developing and not very good. So, you know, don't panic about, you know, that sort of thing that, you know, everyone within 2 years should be at a Paralympics. It's like, you know, it's okay not to be that. You know, Dave Weir's the same, you know, 6 gold medals from the Paralympics, but it took him a long time to get good.
Yeah. So it is that the resilience to keep going, I guess, and to trust in the journey as such as well.
Yeah. And the most important thing is enjoy it, because it's really easy to enjoy it if you're doing well and training's going really well. That's like lovely. But you've got to love it, because when training isn't going so well and you're not improving, you feel like you've hit a plateau or the weather's bad, then you sometimes need to remind yourself why you're doing it.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I've really, really loved a lot of the stuff you've said, Tani. And I know a lot of our young ambassadors who are, the word you use, they're kind of change makers. A lot of them are kind of real positive change makers. So whether that be autism, whether that be disabilities, whatever it is. So I know they're going to be inspired by this. So I just want to thank you on behalf of them for spending this time with us. And hopefully this will raise a bit of awareness about the things you're doing as well, Tani.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. A massive thank you to Provide, who are sponsoring Series 5 of the Multi-Schools Lowdown. They are a community interest company offering services across Essex, providing outstanding care. And if you want to find out more about them, please visit their website at www.provide.org.uk.
Everyone is different and special in their own way. We should be including everyone, so let's start today.